the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. This week, we're talking about how we waste extra time. So in the last two episodes, you got to hear a little bit about each of our day in the life, so how we spend our days. And that kind of got us thinking that maybe we're not spending our days as wisely as we could be. So we thought that it would be a good idea to talk about those tiny little pockets of your day that you're wasting, that you maybe don't even realize that you're wasting, that you could be filling with better things or making more space for creativity.
Yes. And Ashley had the brilliant idea of sharing some articles or research that we've stumbled on in the past about how to find extra time in your day. Because I know a lot of us will say, I just don't have any time, or there's just not enough time for that. There's not enough time to be creative. There's no time to do anything that I want to do after I get done doing all the things that I have to do. And so we kind of were racking our brains over the last couple of years of things that we've read or seen. And Ashley's first thought was the book I Know How She Does It by Laura Vanderkam. Have you read that one, Ashley?
Yeah, I read it a couple years ago when Hadley was a baby, so it's not super fresh in my mind. But the basic idea was she was almost kind of refuting a different book that came out a little while before hers. And that book was by Bridget Schulte, and it's called Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And the basic thesis of that book, Overwhelmed, was that women are at such a disadvantage because we've got what she calls time confetti. So you've only got 15 minutes here or 10 minutes there in between chauffeuring the kids and getting to work and making dinner. And it's not enough time to actually do anything with your life. And Laura Vanderkam in I Know How She Does It kind of takes that book and her whole book isn't about refuting the first one, but it is, she does sort of play off that idea of time confetti and say no, you actually can do stuff with this time. And she has women keep time logs and realize how much actual time they have in their day that they're wasting that they could be putting to better use. And it's just a really fascinating read. I read both of the books and I would not recommend Overwhelmed, but I would recommend I Know How She Does It.
Okay. I love that term time confetti. That makes it sound so much more special than, spare time or scrap time or however I think about it normally. So maybe if I start thinking about it like time confetti, I'll decide to do something more celebratory with it.
Yeah, it is kind of a fun term. And even though it's the concept is I sort of disagree with it, the idea that you can't do anything with those spare moments of your day, I do like the term time confetti because it's kind of an accurate descriptor for all those awkward little moments you end up with that you're like, okay, what do I do now? And so often we end up just squandering it on our phones usually.
Yes, guilty here. So another book that you and I have talked about for years on the podcast, literally years at this point, which is crazy to say, is Essentialism by Greg we don't know how to say it. It's been years and we still don't know how to say it. And that book talks about getting rid of everything that's extraneous. So anything that just you're doing, but you really shouldn't be doing because it's taking up your valuable time. And so by shedding everything that you shouldn't be doing and focusing on what really matters, what's only essential, you have more time to do things and to do them well and to do them right and to feel less frantic in your everyday life.
Yeah, and those ideas in Essentialism are the kinds of things that you can come back to again and again because you tend to forget them as you're living your life and your calendar fills up and you get busy. And I don't reread the entire book every year, but I go back through and look at least my little margin notes and the things I underlined. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I underlined that for a reason so that I would remember it and not fall back into being super busy and doing things that don't actually matter. So if you haven't read Essentialism, or if you haven't read it in a while, that's a really good way to really focus on those tasks that are worth doing in your spare time and maybe finding more spare time than you currently have.
So is that the essentialist version of reading Essentialism? It's just going back through and reading the highlights and not the entire book?
You know, I think it is for at least like 3 or 5 years. And then at like the 5 year mark, you should probably go back and reread the whole thing and see if you have new things to underline that maybe you missed the first time around or that are more applicable. But for now, it works.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe if you've gone through a big like life transition and need to just kind of get back on track. I find that a lot of times if I get through a really, really busy season or I've added something new to my plate, that I just kind of need a reminder to go back and reset. And Essentialism, picking it up and flipping through it, usually does that for me. Even the cover, it's just so very like obvious. Like you go from frantic to streamlined really quickly. And that's always a good reminder.
Yeah, that is very true. And I think one of the focuses of Essentialism, I'm not sure if he actually uses this word in the book, but he does seem to center on the idea of minimalism, which is living an uncluttered life so that you can see your priorities and make fewer decisions and just really live a life that matters rather than being focused with busy work and distractions. And a couple blogs that we really like are becomingminimalist.com and nosidebar.com. Both of those have really great writers and great pieces on sort of minimalist lifestyles and how that can be applicable to you where you're at. They make it very approachable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether you have kids, don't have kids, or an empty nester, there's a lot of really good information there about not only just getting rid of your stuff, but getting rid of commitments and things that you just have been hanging on to for too long and could probably serve you better by ending. And I like the idea of a minimalism too, and I think both of those blogs have talked about it before, about the idea of decision fatigue. So I don't know if you find this, Ashley, but as you go throughout the day, you have a very set number of decisions that you can make and that you can make well. And as you go farther and farther down the road each day, it gets harder to make good decisions with good self-control, I think, which is why at the end of the day, we end up sitting on the couch, watching Netflix and eating ice cream rather than exercising and eating a fruit cup. I don't know about you, but I've never chosen a fruit cup at 9 o'clock at night on the couch.
No, fruit cups are not a nighttime food.
No, they are not. There may be a breakfast food if you get up and you're feeling really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I experience that decision fatigue. And I think some people probably struggle with it more than others, depending on like what your life is like and with your structure and everything. Mm-hmm. But I think if you are, especially you've got little kids and you need to make more decisions in a day than you even thought were possible, like, oh, can you have that snack right now? And can you wear those pants? And do you need to eat right now? Or should I let you cry? Or should I leave you in your crib? Like, all of a sudden, every 30 seconds, there's another decision. And it really does add up. So one podcast that we both really enjoy is Straight and Curly. And their episode on decision fatigue is really, really helpful on that. It's their episode 64, which we'll link to in the show notes.
Yeah, we will have links to everything that we just mentioned in the show notes so you guys don't have to try to remember it. I know I listen to podcasts when I'm driving a lot of time and I'm like, ooh, I need to remember that thing. And then I'm really, really happy when they're like, we'll put a link in the show notes. So all I have to remember is what podcast I was listening to, which is enough of a trick in and of itself.
Yeah. Yes. Or what episode of that podcast you were listening to if you listen to multiples in a row like I do.
Yes, I do tend to binge on podcasts. I don't know if it's good or bad.
Yeah.
And then I know you mentioned, Ashley, that you have in the past used another app that can track the time that you're spending on your devices. So tell me about that.
Yes. So it's called the Moment app, and we'll link to it in the show notes, but it's an app for, I've used it on my phone, but I think you can also use it on tablets as well, and it just tells you how much time in the day you are actually spending on your device, and it adds up, you know, all those quick checks to Facebook or to your email, or like all the things that you don't think really count, it adds them all up and it makes them count.
Like in big chunks, like you spent an hour and 23 minutes on Facebook.
Yes.
Ooh, yikes.
Yeah. You can set limits for yourself, and it'll tell you if you go over. It can, like, if you've got kids who are of an age to have devices, you can manage their time as well. So you can see how much they're using their devices. You can see which apps you use the most. So maybe if there's an app that's just distracting you that needs to be deleted off your phone, it can sort of show you that pattern. So that's really helpful if wasting time on your phone or your tablet is something you struggle with.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I'm going to have to download that and see how much time I waste on my phone every day. Because like you said, it's that minute or two, like, I'm just going to check this here. And then you look up and you're like, I have been on my phone for like 22 minutes. What has happened to me? And why am I not doing something slightly more productive?
Exactly. Yeah, so speaking of phones, that leads us into one of our main conversations this week, which is what are our biggest time wasters? And I think phones ranked pretty high for both of us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the first thing we both put on our outline for this show, which is a little telling. I don't know if you have this issue when you've got babies that you're nursing or anything, but I find that when Arthur came home from the hospital, that was one of the things that I would do is while I, you know, was nursing Arthur, I would hop on my phone and check all of my notifications to see who was trying to get a hold of me. Like, hey, how are you guys doing? And responding to all those texts and responding to those Facebook messages, trying to arrange like people who wanted to drop off dinner. You don't want to just ignore people when they're trying to do nice things for you. So I found myself hopping on my phone at least a dozen times a day and spending more time on it than I ever anticipated that I would when I just brought a new baby home. So I really need to figure out how to break that habit now that we're almost 6 months into, you know, Arthur's short little life.
Yeah. I think having an app like Momentum can help with that, with setting limits and things like that. My issue with my phone, because I was very resistant to having a smartphone. I'm a total laggard when it comes to technology. So I did not even get a smartphone until 3 years ago when Hadley was born. And it was even an older model smartphone at that point. So it's like basically obsolete now. Like there are apps I can't download on it because it's like, I'm sorry, your device is not supported. It's very old. So I have never had notifications on for anything. Like I don't have it on for email or any social media. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't even have the Facebook app on my phone or Facebook Messenger, but I still check Facebook on my phone all the time on Chrome, which is really obnoxious because it's not like it's a good user experience on your phone, but I still do it because it's not enough of a deterrent to keep me away from it. So sometimes I just have to like leave my phone where I can't see it or where it's hard to get to. Mm-hmm. And one workaround that I'd use when I'm having trouble like going on Facebook too often on my desktop, which happens a lot while I'm working. If I'm procrastinating on something, I'm like, I'll just check in on Facebook. I use the FeedBurner extension for Chrome, which blocks your entire news feed, but it lets you access your messages and like your events and your groups. So if you use any of that for work or for keeping in touch with people, you can still use that, but it blocks your news feed so you can't like get sucked into the rabbit hole. So 99% of the time, if I pop over to Facebook because I'm wasting time and my feed is blocked, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to leave because that's what I was really there for, was procrastination, and now I can't do that.
That is genius. I hop on Facebook. I don't have notifications or any push notifications coming to my phone from anything because I learned that like years ago when I got a smartphone. If there's notifications, you hear it ding and buzz like 8,000 times a day and you never get a good like concentrated chunk of time to pay attention to anything. But I did not know about FeedBurner. This I'm going to have to download.
Yep. It's very helpful. Actually, since it's a Chrome extension and since I use Facebook on Chrome, I could probably use it on my phone. I would have to look into that and see if I could use that, but that would be very helpful for me because that's for whatever reason, like the only reason I really even need a smartphone is because I check my email during the day for work and I don't want to always have to go back to my computer, but I like being able to see if anything actually important comes in. It like even if it's noon and I'm feeding the kids lunch or whatever, I'm not even addicted to like checking my email, but I'll check my email and be like, okay, there was nothing. And then it's like right over to Facebook for no reason.
Yeah. It's like, it's a conditioned response now that we need to figure out how to behaviorally break. Yeah. My tip for not hopping, and I'm guilty of hopping on email and then like to see if something important came through, but then also like, oh, while I'm here, I'll just clean out all the junk. And then, oh yeah, I never responded to that email from Ashley or whomever. And then I get sucked in that vortex and you're like, and it's been half an hour now and I've just checked email and I didn't want to sit down and check email now. I wanted to do something else. So my, I guess, solution to that is just to avoid my computer. If I don't even walk into my office, I can't sit down and get stuck. I don't know if that's a good solution or not.
It's definitely a true solution. If you are not at your computer, you can't get stuck on your computer. Like, that's a true statement.
Yeah. I've also just like turned off the Wi-Fi on my MacBook before. So whenever you, and then you still, you'll automatically like pull up Safari or pull up Chrome and be like, I'm going to hop on Facebook. And then it doesn't work. And you're like, wait, my internet's, oh wait, I turned it off to keep me from doing this.
Sometimes it's even helpful if I'm working to use something like self-control. I don't know if I've talked about that app on here before or not, but it's a program that you actually download to your computer and you can blacklist whichever sites you want. And it will, like, you set your time limit with it and you say, okay, blacklist these sites, and you turn on self-control and it will not let you go to those sites for the entire time you selected, even if you quit the program, even if you restart your computer. So you have to be really careful about what you block and make sure you won't need it, but it's great.
Wow. So you could you set it up to do like a recurring block every day until 9 p.m. or something on certain sites, or do you have to go in and manually do it every day?
You have to go in and manually set it. At least I think so. And like maybe there's a paid version of it that gets fancy like that, or I don't know. I have a free version. I don't know if there's a paid version. I guess I haven't looked into it that closely, but I always have to check my blacklist before I start it, because sometimes I block myself out of my email depending on what I'm doing. I'm like, no, I don't need to check email. But then other times I need my email to do my work and I'm like, no, I locked myself out of email for 5 hours.
So then can you hop on that email on a different device? Like, not that I want to encourage people circumnavigating the cool app that's helping you be more productive, but...
Yes, you can. It does not, like, it's downloaded to your specific device, your specific computer. So you can go like get your other computer, your tablet or whatever, and still have access to your stuff over there.
I feel like we sound like addicts.
We do, probably. And that's kind of how we, that's almost how people think about the internet now, right? Like, we can't even imagine like doing work without it, even though 10 years ago, even people still were.
Absolutely. Scott and I were having that conversation this morning about there not being an internet 10 or 12 years ago when we were talking about something, finding something or other. Oh, I texted my brother today to ask him for Scott if he had, we're going to Tennessee in a couple of weeks for my brother's wedding. And I texted him to ask if he had a Tennessee gazetteer. And he texts me back and he says, no, LOL. And I was like, oh, wait, he came of age in the land of the internet. Like, he uses actually his phone and GPS and not a paper map like Scott. I don't know. Is Scott the last person alive who prefers a paper map? Maybe.
He is not, because we have a map book and like a couple of state atlases in our house right now. So there you go.
There you go. I got Scott a map for his birthday, and he was thrilled. So that's what
fantastic.
We're working with here.
Jacob teaches Hadley how to read maps because he does not believe in GPS.
Oh, goodness. We're living parallel lives, like I've said before. It's great.
We are.
Okay, so avoiding the computer, one way to do that is to use a paper map. I just find that that's not necessarily conducive to everyday life. I like using my GPS to tell me when to turn left to get to that next appointment at that place that I've never been to. So getting rid of the internet and social media completely is not an answer for our lives that we live online these days. But what are some other things that you could do to not waste as much time? Is there anything other than just staying off of Facebook that we can add to this conversation?
Well, when it comes to technology in particular, I think just being conscious of your bad habits can really go a long way in helping you break them and reprogram your brain to not like reach for your phone all the time, or like if you feel yourself like getting bored or reaching for your phone, even sometimes I'll be on my phone and I'll be like, why am I doing this? Like I could be reading right now. Mm-hmm. And so then I'll like set it down and go find my Kindle or whatever. And it's really easy to think to yourself like, oh, it's only 5 minutes, but that time tends to stretch out further than you plan. Mm-hmm. And it really adds up throughout the day. So just, I think just being more intentional with your online usage can help a lot and make a big difference.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I find too that if you do have to hop on and check something on your phone, don't sit down with your phone in your hand. I know this is going to sound weird, but if you're just like standing in the middle of your living room and you pick up your phone off the end table to quickly check email, just keep standing. And then you won't be encouraged to just camp out and sit down and be on your phone for a long time. You'd be like, I'm checking my email, I'm standing in the living room, and now I'm going to set my phone back down because that's where it belongs.
Yep, that's a good one. I like that. I would not have thought about that, but that makes so much sense because now you're just awkwardly hovering, which is what you're mentally doing, awkwardly hovering. Oh. So now you're noticing like, oh, this is dumb. I should be doing something else.
There are other things I need to do in this house other than be on my phone.
Another way that we both waste time is sort of going back to that idea of decision fatigue and having to make too many choices as the day wears on. I have realized that not having a routine, especially in the afternoon, is not doing me any favors, and I end up wasting so much time. So what I try to do in the afternoon is see how the kids are feeling, or like, does anybody need a nap, or what time was lunch? Or I think sometimes when you have kids, you have to be so flexible around their schedules that it's easy to just forego a routine altogether. And I have noticed that I'm a lot more productive in the morning than I am in the afternoon. And in the afternoon, sometimes we end up just sitting there and like, I'm like, well, I'm waiting to see what the kids need. And then you look up and it's time to start dinner and you didn't do anything all afternoon because I was just in this habit of waiting and like trying to make a decision and never making a decision. And sometimes if you wait too long to decide to do something, then somebody does need a nap and now you can't go anywhere. And it's almost better to just have a little bit more structure so that you don't have to make that decision when you're feeling tired and sluggish.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Have you ever thought about doing, and I don't know if this would work or not, I certainly don't do it, but like Mondays are library days, Tuesday are park days, weather permitting, like that kind of a thing? Is that what you're looking for routine? Or just having kind of 4 or 5 options that are kind of preloaded and these are the things that you might do, and so just picking one and going isn't as big of a deal as like coming up with one from scratch?
I think it's almost having more of like a default like categories to choose from, like at this time we will either take a walk or go to the gym depending on the weather, or at this time we will either go outside and play or go to the park. But so much of it, this is where I get stuck, I feel like so much of it depends too on the weather. So like say for example, like in the whole winter you can pretty much take out park time and playing outside because you're not going to be able to be outside long enough with little kids for it to be worth it. But even like if there's a snowstorm or if it's raining, am I going to want to drag the kids out to the library? Maybe not. Maybe we should do that tomorrow when it's, the weather forecast is different. So that's where I get stuck. And so I think I just need to have more of a structured, like at this point we will do some sort of exercise, even if it's like just taking a walk around the block or stretching or whatever. And at this time we will read together, even if it's, you know, just 1 or 2 kids' books, like that still counts. That was still reading time. So having a little bit more of that, like very accessible and still flexible, but routine in place. And I actually just listened recently to Kendra Adachi from The Lazy Genius. She had a recent episode of her podcast about setting a new fall routine. And we can link to that in the show notes as well. But I thought that was really helpful for figuring out, like, if you're in a new season and your routine needs to change, like I'm realizing mine does, if I want to make the most of my afternoons. That was really helpful with like questions and starting places for how to put that in place in your actual life.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Kendra's episode too. It was about finding a new fall rhythm. And I'm finding that I really like the word rhythm as opposed to routine in my days right now. Like you said, with little kids, it's really kind of a crapshoot as to whether or not you can go outside or they do need a nap or something like that. And I'm finding with a baby, it's even more so because Arthur's still kind of on a schedule where his nap times are determined by when he wakes up. So if he wakes up early from his first nap, his second nap is going to be earlier in the day than I had planned. And it's really hard to make appointments and like standing commitments and things like that. But it's also really hard to know, oh, you know, Monday afternoon, we're going to go to the library. We could go to the library anytime between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m., depending on what his naps look like that day. So having a rhythm, I think, is helpful in avoiding that, oh, we can't do anything because we don't have a routine. But wait, we do have a rhythm, so we know what kind of things come after other things, even if they're not at 1 p.m. each Monday.
Yeah, that's a really helpful way to think of it. And I think that would help so much with, like, I feel like I just waste so much time in the afternoon with waiting and deciding, and that's where I get sucked into spending more time on my phone. I almost never reach for my phone in the morning when I know, like, okay, this is what we're doing. And so that afternoon time would be a really good time to, like you said, find a rhythm that's not necessarily exactly at this time, but that still works for us and for the kids.
Yeah. I like that. Like I said, I don't also have a routine. We're just still kind of doing the baby thing. But I've often thought, and maybe I'm crazy for not having done this yet, but that I should make a list that literally says like priorities in order and write down everything that needs to be done on a daily basis. And then when I have spare pockets of time, or when Arthur is sleeping, or when he's, you know, hanging out by himself for a few minutes without demanding my attention, I can just start at the top of that priority list and go on down. And I don't know if that's going to look like eat, shower. Those are the priorities. Eating comes before showering in this house. I don't know about anyone else. Food is more important.
Oh, yes.
You know, they make deodorant for those kind of days. So like food, shower, and then laundry. So we have clean clothes, or, you know, get some diapers ready, like that kind of thing. I don't know if there is, if that's madness to kind of structure life that way, or if it's a genius idea and I should take advantage of it.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart idea to have your priorities kind of laid out, even if you don't do it on a daily basis. But if you have like a, these are the things that need to get done this week, and it's like make a doctor appointment or like I need to run this specific errand or whatever, like at least you've got it there, and then you can kind of just run down the list. And like for me, putting like laundry on there would be too specific, and that would be like, I would look at that and be like, no, I'll do it tomorrow. Like, it'll be fine. Don't tell me what to do. So, but other people might like seeing like the daily tasks.
Oh, are you not a list maker?
I love lists. I just don't like them when they're too specific, because then I feel like they're insulting me.
Oh, interesting. Is that kind of the INFJ portion of things? Because I, as the INTJ, I like things absolutely specifically laid out, and I want like steps and like, oh, that's the tiniest possible little segment that I can break something down into. I get to cross it off anyway.
Yeah, it might be that, or it might be, I'm actually an INFP, so I wonder if that's partially also the difference in the P and the J.
Maybe.
Because I used to test as INFJ, and it was just like a year or two ago that I figured out that I had been testing wrong. And yeah, perceivers, that's what the P stands for. Perceivers are a lot less likely to want structure. And we kind of resist that and get a little rebellious, I think. So I'm guessing that's where it comes from. But I still need lists, because otherwise my brain like just goes away. I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing anymore. Before babies, I could just keep it all in my head somehow. And now I can't. So
mom brain is a real thing. They have done studies. Okay, so we both agree we need to spend less time on our phones and probably figure out routines and or rhythms for ourselves. But what if you found extra time in your day, what would you do instead of what you're currently doing? So spending too much time on Facebook and kind of letting the afternoons wash away as you sit there waiting to find out what the day's going to look like. What would you do instead?
So my automatic go-to is to read, because I'm like, if I'm reading something on my phone, I could be reading an actual book. Like, that's not that different. So why am I not holding a book instead of my phone? So that's the first thing that comes to mind, is like, no, 5 minutes of reading is still 5 minutes of reading. Like, it still counts. So to be fair, some books are really difficult to jump in and out of if they've got a really driving plot or if it's like a really heavy book and you kind of need to get yourself in the right mindset for it. But other books are a lot easier to jump in and out of here and there. And I usually have, because I read more than one book at a time, I usually have at least one book that I could be reading during those small pockets of time. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. But other things would be journaling, even if it's not like full sentences, if it's just bullet points or just like notes about an idea that I want to expand on later, that still counts. Doing nothing, because I used to spend a lot of time just not like just thinking and not actually doing anything. And I don't do that very much anymore. And I kind of miss it. So doing nothing.
Well, and I think a lot of times we mistake doing nothing for not being productive. And I think they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah. And like sometimes you actually have like better ideas and more creative breakthroughs because you're just letting your mind wander and do whatever. And like I'm really bad at noticing things in my surroundings. Like I'm one of those people who can just be like I can drive somewhere and have no memory of like what I drove past, you know, which is probably scary. But I'm really bad at paying attention to what's going on around me. So it kind of gives me a chance to do that and to actually be more grounded in the world, which is a good thing.
I know you mentioned also instead of wasting time, even if it's 5 minutes and you don't have a book you can really hop into or out of, and you don't really have anything to write down or journal, using those 5 or 10 minutes to like get yourself ahead for another time when you might have more time. That was really awkwardly worded. I'm gonna do that again. Just, I know so often we don't have these like big chunks of time to do anything in, but when we do, it's, you know, when we're supposed to be cooking supper. And so obviously cooking supper takes precedent over anything else. So if we were able to, in those tiny little pockets of time throughout the week, get things prepped ahead of time, like chopping vegetables or running the vacuum or loading or unloading the dishwasher, instead of kind of relegating those little mindless tasks to one time of day that we normally do them, maybe that could help us all free up a little bit more time for creativity.
Yeah, because if you can do, and I know there's different schools of thought about like how you do housework, you know, if you do it in big chunks or if you tackle it kind of throughout the week. But I think it's a lot easier if you're like, okay, I'm going to take this 5 minutes and tidy up this room. And then that's something that I don't have to do later after the kids are in bed, because maybe once they're in bed, I'll be like, oh, well, I should also be cleaning this or that. Or, and this doesn't usually happen to me. I usually am not like, oh yeah, I have to clean more. I don't have that problem. But it does, it can be distracting, you know? So even just having, you know, if you don't have anything else to do with those 5 minutes, like, why not do some like dust? I never dust, but I could. I have time to. So like maybe I should start. The dinner prep especially is a big one too, where like you mentioned, like the chopping vegetables and whatever, like that, if you could start dinner even 15 minutes later every night because you prepped it earlier in the day when you had nothing to do, like that actually kind of saves you a lot of time.
Yes. Or could even get dinner on the table faster, which means kids get done eating earlier and maybe go to bed earlier. Who knows? Who knows?
That would be the dream.
Oh, goodness. So kind of talking about whether or not we do little tiny tasks in their own time slots or kind of grouped in with other things, batching tasks. I know you've mentioned before that you like to batch tasks. Do you still do that? Do you still find that you have enough time in the week to kind of arrange those tasks in a way that you'd like?
You know, I still do for work. So, you know, I do like, and even some household stuff, like I do the budget and all the bills that I need to pay like in the same chunk of time once a week. I don't do that stuff as it comes in. But, and for work, I do something similar. But for the housework, I've fallen off on it a little bit. My meal planning is still pretty consistent. I've fallen off the bandwagon a little bit, but it could be better. But I usually plan for at least a week at a time ahead. But preparing for meals ahead of time, I could be better at, or doing that thing where you make like too much of something so that you can freeze it and just have freezer meal easy later. Like I'm terrible at doing stuff like that. I'm like, nope, just not gonna happen. So I think I could apply batching better in my life, I think. How about you? How are you making that work?
Yeah, I often forget that you can batch tasks, and then all of a sudden I remember, like, oh yeah, if I make two pans of enchiladas instead of one, I'll put one in the freezer, and then a couple of weeks from now, when we've had a crazy day and we haven't pulled anything out of the freezer, we can just reheat enchiladas, and that'll be an easy dinner that we don't feel like not adult about eating, like chicken nuggets or something. Every now and again, we're like, hey, we're going to eat corn dogs for dinner, yes. Like real adults who have a baby, but it works. No judgment.
You know, that works until the baby is old enough to want your chicken nuggets.
Yeah, I suppose. And then you have to share, which is just sad to me. We're going to have to share ice cream. Mm-hmm. I just realized that. Man.
Oh, yeah. That's anyway. A bad one.
So batching tasks, I wish I would think ahead and do this more often. So maybe I can make that a goal as we're kind of going into fall and getting into a good fall rhythm. Thank you, Kendra at Lazy Genius. We'll start automatically thinking like, oh, if I'm making this batch of meatballs, why don't I make twice as many meatballs and just freeze half of them for spaghetti later in the month? That would be genius. So, and then if you're not cooking dinner that night, you get more time to do fun stuff. You hope.
Yeah, and you had also mentioned, like, along with that batching tasks, and especially with the freezer meals, looking ahead to see how you could make a hard day coming up easier. So you had mentioned this, and I love this idea because I pretty much never do this. Like, I never think ahead to what's coming more than a day in advance. So what do you do to prepare for those busy days?
Oh, goodness. It kind of depends on what the day is going to look like. For the most part, the biggest thing I do to prepare for days where I know I'm going to be stressed, and I am a list maker, is to make a list. So even if, like, it was probably 2 weeks ahead of time before we had to go to Scott's brother's wedding this spring, shortly after Arthur was born. So we had a one-month-old, and we were going to have to go to a wedding all day in another state. And I made obsessive lists about everything we were going to need to take with us and what time we needed to leave, and then kind of backtracked from, so if we leave at 1 p.m., we need to have Arthur fed and dressed at 12 p.m., like that kind of obsessive detail. And that was really, really helpful because I tend to have everything in my head juggling at once. And I find that if I write things down, I'm able to drop those balls in my head and forget about them and not have to think about them constantly over and over again until that event happens. So even just looking ahead and making lists for myself really frees up a lot of mental space. It's kind of a mental minimalism, maybe. We'll coin a term here. But even looking ahead to, like, oh, on Wednesday, I know we're going to have this doctor's appointment, and that's the next time we have to leave the house. So I'll go ahead and, while I'm emptying the diaper bag from this trip, I'll go ahead and just pack it with everything we need to go to the doctor's office. And then I don't even have to think about it again. And that's really helped in this crazy baby season when it takes you about an hour and a half to leave the house for anything, that, you know, one thing is already done.
Yeah, that is so smart. And I like that mental minimalism. That's because that's totally what it is, right? Like, once you write it down or once you prepare for it, your brain can kind of let it go and you don't feel so stressed mm-hmm. out or overwhelmed or whatever. And I also really like that that is totally something you can do in like 5 minutes that would otherwise be mm-hmm. lost to our phones, probably, because that seems to be the only way we waste time. That's just yep. a really smart way to get your time back and to make a different day less stressful. Like, I almost never think mm-hmm. outside of the 24-hour box that I am currently in. So, like, thinking ahead to what you could do for even a couple days down the road is a really smart idea.
Yeah. I know when I used to work full-time outside of the home, I would always have, like, a couple cans of soup or ravioli or something in my desk, knowing that one day I was going to forget my lunch and I would need something to eat. And I always was like, thank you, previous Abby, from realizing that I'm dumb some days and don't have it together. But now I do, because previous Abby had her head screwed on straight.
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely where I'm seeing the difference in our personality types. I'm like, wow, that is so smart. I would never, ever have done that. If I had forgotten my lunch, I would have been like, well, I guess I get to eat out today. Thank you, previous Ashley from this yeah. morning, who was dumb and forgot her lunch.
Oh, goodness. No, it was great when you're like, I am so hungry and I don't have time to go anywhere. And oh, wait, here's a can of ravioli. It may have been in there for 3 months, but I need it now. And that is what I need. So that was great. I have one other thing that I keep thinking that I should do instead of wasting time. When Arthur was born, a friend gave me like a little calligraphy set, like a pen and really nice ink, and was like, this is a gift for you for the new baby, because, you know, a lot of times as a new mom, you have a few minutes here and there to do something for yourself, but not any big chunks of time. And so this is something I thought you could pick up and put down as you wanted to. I was like, oh, that's such a wonderful idea. What a lovely gift for a new mom. And have I even opened that pen and ink since Arthur's been born? No. No, I have not. Because instead, I've been, you know, scrolling on Instagram and checking out what everyone else is doing instead of, you know, doing something that's actually, I don't know, life-giving, I guess. I think a lot of times social media is draining, but we still turn to it as the first thing we indulge in.
Yeah, it is kind of unfortunate that it only seems to take away, and very, very rarely does anything on social media actually add to our lives. And I would say that like genuine connection with people is one of the upsides, but how often does that really happen when you're just mindlessly scrolling? Yes. So I really like that idea of, you know, trying something new, and even like, I love that idea as a gift for a new mom. Like, that's super smart. Like, what a considerate friend you have. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I wish I could say that I have taken advantage of it, but I have not. So I need to do that. Maybe that'll be my winter project when there is like no more walks to the mailbox or anything like that. And you really just have to hunker down and find something to get you through these Midwestern winters.
Yeah, that sounds like a good winter project. I like it. So that is how we waste our time and how we try not to waste our time and what we all could be doing instead of wasting our time.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing we both wish we would do more of is read books, which means we should talk about good books, right?
Oh, yes. I think we both have some good books to talk about for Mini Book Club today. I'm excited. You go first.
So I go first? Okay. I'm really intrigued by Ashley's, because she wouldn't even write anything about it in our little outline. So I just finished A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I really should look this up before we hop on the podcast to record. I loved it. It was recommended by a friend. I'd read his other novel, Rules of Civility, and really enjoyed it. It was good. And then A Gentleman in Moscow was recommended. I never would have picked this up based on the title alone. Neither of those, being a gentleman or being in Moscow, would have intrigued me. But a friend of mine who has a PhD in theater, so she is a bright, snappy lady, recommended it, said it's really good and that I would like it even better than his other book. And it was absolutely true. So it takes place in 1920s to 1950s Russia. And the entire novel almost takes place in a hotel. So 30 years of life in a hotel. And it was just really interesting. I would think that that could be boring, that much constraint, but I found that it really added to the story and made the hotel almost a character itself, and I really loved that. It was also just a really nice, warm, feel-good story. So I recommend, if you haven't read anything by Amor Towles, start with A Gentleman in Moscow.
That's really interesting. I like when there's a strong sense of place, which it sounds like there has to be if it takes place in such a confined area, but I have read Rules of Civility, and I enjoyed it. I really liked the setting of that one. I want to say it was 1920s New York, but I could be wrong about the year. It was New York, though.
20s to 30s. I feel like it took a couple decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that one was good. I felt like it started dragging a little bit. Like, that book slowed down a little for me and started... It got tough for me to finish. So I heard about A Gentleman in Moscow, but I have not read it, kind of because I heard, oh, it's in one singular hotel. And I thought his other book got kind of slow. And I was like, oh, maybe this isn't right for me. So I haven't given it a shot. But now I'm thinking that maybe I should rethink that life choice.
Yeah. And I know one thing that I think it really has going for it, and sometimes I like this in a book, and sometimes I really, really don't, is that it tends to jump ahead quite a few years at a time. So you're not just like plodding along through every year of 1920 to 1950. Like, you have these big gaps where a lot of things change in the outside world, and consequently definitely change inside the hotel as well. So I think that helps keep it from getting bogged down at all.
Yeah, and I mean, I admittedly do not know very much about Russian history. I should know more, probably. But like 20s to 50s Russia, like quite a bit has to change in there historically, right?
Yes. Yes, quite a bit is a good descriptor for that. So now that you're going to read A Gentleman in Moscow, you have to tell me all about your book that you're being very secretive about.
Okay, so my book, and I actually read this a couple weeks ago, but I'm so excited to talk about it with you, is Bear Town by Frederick Bachman. And that is the same author as A Man Called Ove that you recommended so heartily at the beginning of this season. And I did not even realize that it was the same author until I was almost done with Bear Town, because the books are so totally different. Now, I haven't read A Man Called Ove, but I'm going off of your description and off of other people's like synopsis of the book. But Bear Town is very, very heavy. There are a ton of very, really weighty themes. And it's about a small town. It's a hockey town, which I like because hockey is kind of a thing here. I think it is in Wisconsin as well.
It is, yes. But I grew up in Illinois where hockey just doesn't exist. So it's still growing on me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, here, like I really actually connected with the book a lot because I guess if you're in a state or in a place that doesn't play hockey, you wouldn't get this, but hockey is kind of a big deal. Like it's one of those sports that people like, okay, so if you think of people in the South about their football, like people here can get that way about hockey. Right. Like we don't get excited about like high school football here, but there's a high school hockey tournament every year that like completely sells out our NHL size rink every single year. I've gone to it before. It's wonderful. I watch it on TV every year. So that's the setting for the book, is there's this hockey town and it's a small town, and it's kind of the entire economy of the town almost. Like there's a lot resting on the success of this hockey team, and it deals a lot with just sort of sports culture and how it can lead to groupthink and maybe some less than ideal qualities in the star players or in the star coaches and what that can do to a town. There were just like, it explored so many themes so deeply and so well. I will say that I will not give away what the trigger warning is because I think it's sort of a spoiler, but I will say that if you like having trigger warnings for your books, you should probably look up what this one is just in case. Because there is, again, there's like I can't even discuss all the themes without giving away what I would say is a spoiler that comes about 50% of the way through the book. But then you get to the end and you realize that there are, like, it's kind of a cliffhanger of an ending almost. You're like, well, what specifically happens to these people? Like, I wanted to know more. And then you go online and find out that it's a trilogy and there are more. And I'm so excited because it was not something I ever would have guessed would be a trilogy. But now I am so excited to follow more of these characters because there was a whole cast of people and I just want to know more about them. This book was amazing.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I've been meaning to read more of Bachman's stuff because I loved A Man Called Ove, but I haven't actually checked anything out from the library. So adding that one to my list, even the title to me, Bear Town, sounds really interesting. And maybe it's because we're in the Midwest and kind of near the North Woods culture, but I feel like the word Bear Town has so much resonance for this upper Midwest that we live in.
Yeah, and maybe that's why I connect with it so much. Like, I think it's a wonderful book regardless, but there is, I believe it takes place in Sweden. He's Swedish, right? The author is Swedish, I believe.
Yes.
So it's taking place in Sweden, which is actually like, in the upper Midwest here, we have a lot of Scandinavian heritage. So a lot of the settlers here came here because it reminded them of their homes. There were lakes. It gets really, really cold. There's a lot of snow. So this book also actually has a strong sense of place where, you know, there's a forest and it feels almost alive sometimes. And there's, you know, the big frozen lake that the kids all go out and play hockey on and learn how to skate on. And it just, really hit me because it kind of felt like home. So really, really recommend that one.
Well, excellent. I am definitely going to read that one. Have you been reading anything else? I know you read multiple books at the same time, which I do not. So sometimes you have more than one book to talk about.
I do. I fell off the bandwagon a little bit in September, and I am now like I had been a couple books ahead in my Goodreads challenge, and now Goodreads is all like, you're three books behind, and I feel like it's shaming me every time I log in. So I don't have anything else to talk about right now, but I'm in the middle of a couple that hopefully I will finish plodding through soon, so there will be more to talk about next time.
Well, excellent. I just started yesterday The Gollum and the Ginny, which both you and Kendra recommended. So I feel like we're talking about Kendra a lot on this episode. She is a honorary guest today.
Yes, we really like her. We say only lovely things when she's not here.
Yes, very true. So I am going to have to finish Gollum and the Ginny and tell you what I thought about it next time.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what you think about that one. So I think that's all that we had for this week about how we waste extra time. Hopefully you, our listeners, were not wasting your time listening to our episode.
Yes, hopefully you heard us talking about how much time we waste on Facebook and you're like, psh, not a problem for me. I never waste time on social media. I hope that is what you're gonna say. I doubt it, but I hope.
Yes. So with that in mind, we hope that you spend this week reclaiming lots of spare time that you didn't know you had and putting it to good use, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.